Do you love Yankee baseball? If so, this is the show for you. Welcome to Pinstripe Talk with your host, Nick Delahanty. Welcome to another edition of the Pinstripe Talk podcast. I'm your host, Nick Delahanty, coming to you live from Garfield, New Jersey, here on January 22nd. We have a lot in store for today's show. The Yankees finally make a move to trade Sonny Gray. Gray goes to the Reds, and what ends up being a three-way deal, the Yankees end up getting back a prospect and a draft pick in return. We'll break down that trade and more. Plus, Adam Ottavino signs with the Yankees, why this move is so intriguing for the Yankees, and what does it mean for the Yankees bullpen as we head into the 2019 season. As we begin today's show, we want to remind you that there are multiple ways to stream our podcast. First and foremost, you can find us on Apple Podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, rate, review, anything you like to do about the show, your feedback is appreciated. You can also find us on Spotify, Simplecast, TuneIn Radio, Google Play Music. You name it, our podcast is located on there for you. Multiple ways to listen. We hope that you, in fact, find a way that best fits your needs. Now, before we get into the Sonny Gray deal, let's break down the Adam Ottavino signing, which, in my opinion, is a great signing for the New York Yankees. Our last podcast, I talked about how the Yankees were still a bullpen piece short, in my opinion, with an already stacked bullpen. You think it's crazy hearing me say that they were short an arm. But the Yankees were able to come to a deal with Ottavino, 3 years, $27 million, about $9 million annually for the right-hander. This is a move that solidifies the Yankees' bullpen. Losing David Robertson hurt, and he was a valuable piece to the Yankees' arsenal. But adding a guy like Ottavino and bringing back another guy like Zach Britton, you just solidify the back end of your bullpen. Let's look at 2019 to start. Looking at the Yankees starting rotation, there are still a lot of question marks surrounding this group. You know, start at the top, Luis Severino. He had a really good first half, struggled a little bit in the second half. You don't know what you're going to get from the right-hander. Then you look at Tanaka, a guy who has had injuries, that UCL is always a ticking time bomb. You just hope that it doesn't go off and that Tanaka's healthy and can pitch the level that he's capable of pitching at. Then you look at Paxton, a guy that hasn't hit 200 innings in a season in his entire big league career. You don't know how many innings he's going to be able to give you durability-wise. CC Sabathia, same thing. You're looking probably at 150 innings, if that, from Sabathia. You just hope that with his heart and his knee, everything holds up. And Jay Happ, you know, Happ was a great addition at the deadline. After re-signing him this offseason, I would believe that the Yankees would hope to get 175 to 185 innings out of him. You know, it's a heavy workload for a guy who's around 36. He's getting up there in age, but I think that the way that Happ pitches and the way that he takes care of himself, it's very doable. But there are a lot of question marks surrounding this rotation. Regardless of what they did to improve the rotation this offseason, you're still going into the season with some concerns. And I think that having a bullpen that's as stacked as the Yankees have is going to help alleviate some of those questions. One thing that I could definitely see the Yankees doing early on is relying on that bullpen earlier in games. You know, in those cold months early in the year, I don't expect them to throw Severino for, say, six or seven innings or extend him farther than they have to. With the arms that they have available at the back end of the bullpen, I think it's going to open up options for Aaron Boone to not only keep everybody fresh, but to kind of ease the starters back into the thick of things. You know, in a game, in a cold April game, you don't want Severino pitching into the eighth inning. That's where the depth of the bullpen is going to help them. You know, you look at Ottavino, you look at Britton, Betances, Chapman, Chad Green. That's not even including Jonathan Holder. That's a very good bullpen. And you add a long reliever, maybe one of the younger guys in the Yankee system that could fill the void. You're currently looking at a situation where the Yankees can rely on their starter for, say, 5 innings, and the bullpen could do the rest of the job. Heck, if a situation occurs and that starter can't get you that 5 innings, this Yankees bullpen is still good enough to keep you in games. Yes, I'm fully aware that you have to monitor your bullpen arms, and you don't want to wear them out early on in the year, especially for a team that has postseason aspirations like the Yankees. However, if used right, this bullpen is going to be very tough to beat in 2019. And if they're all healthy, it's going to be scary for other teams, and it's going to put the pressure on for teams to score runs early in games. Teams are not going to want to get into the belly of that bullpen. They're going to try to do everything in their power to get a lead early to avoid facing those big arms at the back end of the bullpen. Not only does this move make sense for this year in signing Ottavino, but it helps the Yankees' long-term bullpen. How? It's simple. Aroldis Chapman has an opt-out on his contract. Dellin Betances is set to hit the free agent market after this season. Say Betances walks. He gets a big deal elsewhere. Or say Chapman has a monster year, and he decides to opt out, and you're not comfortable bringing him back at the price that he's looking at. You're still looking at a bullpen that will feature Britton, Ottavino, Green, Holder. You still have a strength. Even though you're subtracting from your biggest strength, you still have a strength that's capable to get the job done. And the pieces in place that could fill the void. Yes, depth-wise, you're going to have to replace those guys. They're not easy to replace. However, the Yankees will have four more than enough pieces that could get the job done. Bravo by Brian Cashman to pull that move off, getting out Ottavino. We all know how Ottavino was a Yankee fan growing up. He's posted pictures of himself at Yankee Stadium with his father. We heard him mention that if he had the opportunity, he could strike out Babe Ruth. I would love to see that matchup happen. But I think Ottavino is going to be a great signing for the Yankees. I think that they're going to use him in multiple ways and in multiple roles, because not only can this guy get out right-handers, but he's also good against lefties. He has a couple of good quality pitches that he could rely on. I think the Yankees are going to make the most of their new weapon at the back end of their bullpen. Before we get into the Sunday Gray news, a reminder to our listeners that you can interact with us on social media. We have a set Twitter page for our podcast, at Pinstripe Talk ND. You could also follow my personal account at Nick_Delahanty. If you're not a fan of Twitter, you could send us an email, pinstripetalk@gmail.com. We personally love to talk about the New York Yankees. We would love to have you join in on the conversation. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the Sonny Gray saga is officially over. The New York Yankees have agreed to trade Sonny Gray and left-handed pitcher River Sam Martin to the Cincinnati Reds for second base prospect Shed Long and a high draft pick, which looks to be number 36 in the upcoming June draft. Then the deal got a little bit more complicated as the Yankees flipped Shed Long to the Seattle Mariners for center field prospect Josh Stowers. We'll break the whole entire trade down as we go along in the show. But before we do, I just want to make a note of how disappointing the Sonny Gray trade really was for me. When Gray was an athletic, I had really high hopes for him as a pitcher. I thought he had great stuff. I thought that he would be a top of the rotation starter for a long time. And I always wished that the Yankees would trade for him because I felt that he'd be a great fit in New York. I thought that he would be a great addition to the Yankees rotation. The Yankees make the trade last July to get him. And they gave up a lot at the time. Jorge Mateo, among others. And it was a risk because you're going from a smaller market to a big market. We really didn't know how it was going to work out. But based off what he did in Oakland, I thought it was a no-brainer that he was going to figure it out. However, things didn't work out. He posted a 15-16 record with the Yankees with a 4.51 ERA. Really struggled. If you look at his home and road splits, it seemed like the issue was him pitching in Yankee Stadium. A guy who really just didn't find a home here. And at the beginning of the offseason, Brian Cashman made his statement known that his goal was to ultimately trade Gray this offseason. There was no turning back from those conversations. So Sonny Gray just didn't work out in the Bronx. So now the Yankees are here with a guy who they obviously don't want, who has 1 year left on his deal for approximately $7.5 million. There were a lot of teams in on Gray from the reports, given that this guy was just a couple of years removed from being a great starting pitcher, an all-star caliber type of arm. So you look at a couple of smaller market teams that felt that they could be the one that turned them around. Insert the Reds, who have a connection with Sonny Gray, which I'll explain. Sonny Gray's college pitching coach, Derek Johnson, is currently with the Reds organization. 53% ground ball rate in a ballpark like Great American Ballpark should suit him well. He'll be closer to home. He lives in Nashville, Tennessee. So overall, this deal has the makings of being something that might work out for Gray. As they were talking about the details of this trade, it appeared that the Reds didn't want this to be a one-year gamble on Gray, which I can understand why. You know, you take a chance on this guy, and say he dominates, say he comes back to his Cy Young form. Then you only have him for 1 year. Then he hits the open market. So the Reds, being smart about this, decided, you know what, we have enough faith in Derek Johnson to turn this guy back around, and we think that we can be the one to fix this talented pitcher who just struggled in the big market setting. So as part of the deal, the Reds had a 72-hour window to meet with Gray, talk about an extension, do a physical, all that good stuff. Ended up being that Gray agreed to a 3-year, $30.5 million extension with a $12 million club option for 2023. So if you take his $7.5 million salary for 2019, this deal can max out at 5 years, $50 million. Now, Yankee fans are probably sitting there saying to themselves, you know, after the way he pitched in New York, why would the Reds agree to this kind of deal that locks him up for that long? It's simple. The Reds are taking a gamble on a guy that they think they can fix, and if it works out, they're going to have him at a bargain rate for the next couple of years, throughout his prime. Sonny Gray will turn 30 over the next couple of months. So you're getting him for his age 30, 31, 32, 33, and possibly 34 season. Say he likes Cincinnati. Say he pitches well there. You have him under contract now at a club-friendly price. You're looking at probably around $10 million a year, plus incentives. For a guy with the caliber of stuff that Gray has, if he could figure it out, it's a no-brainer. That's a great deal. And I applaud the Reds for actually taking the initiative to try to lock him up, taking a long-term interest in fixing this guy and making this guy the pitcher that he once was. Absolutely, it's a gamble. But if you're giving up something to get something, you might as well try to make the most of your investment. And that's what they did. You know, you're giving up Shed Long, a prospect that a lot of people are high on, a lot of people think good things of, especially those in the Reds organization. You're better off taking a full risk and jumping both feet in and trying to rectify the problem that Gray has. Yes, I hope it works out for Gray. Obviously, it didn't work out in New York. But we'll see if the Reds could get him back on track. Now let's focus on the Yankees side of this deal before we even get into the Mariners section. Yankees, at the time, got Shed Long and a high draft pick. So when I saw this, instantly I thought, all right, the Yankees need some left-handed pop. Shed Long's a guy that they say has a little bit of power from left-handed side of the plate. We all know the Yankees' right-handed friendly lineup. But the way I saw this was the most intriguing piece of this deal, to me, was the draft pick, the competitive balance pick. I thought this was going to be the highlight of this part of the deal due to the fact that this is something the Yankees could build on. The Yankees could get more talent off of. The Yankees could find a guy in the middle half or between the first and second rounds that they can groom, that they might find a gem with. You know, let's not forget, Aaron Judge was a pick similar in this round, around this area. There are guys still there that can make an impact. Not always is your first-round pick going to be that guy. First-round picks always don't work out. But the Yankees made sure they were able to get a draft pick out of this for a guy that they had no intent on keeping. Then, when you look at Long, you say, yeah, guy's a nice prospect. You could see how and why the Yankees had interest in him, but he's 40-man roster protected. With a crowded 40-man roster, what are the Yankees going to do with him? And insert Josh Stowers and the Mariners, who made this basically a three-way trade. The Yankees shipped Shed Long, who the Mariners liked, over to Seattle and got a center field prospect that, number one, they don't have to protect on their 40-man roster, but somebody that they think over time can be a player that can grow in their organization. So who is Josh Stowers? For starters, he's a 21-year-old center fielder out of the University of Louisville. Was the Mariners' second-round pick. Seemed to have fell a little bit in the draft in terms of stock due to the fact that he struggled during his junior year in college. Was able to have a bounce back second half of the year to kind of regain some of that stock. Still wasn't able to climb back into that first round selection area. Scouts seem to like this kid. They say he's a plus speed and plus defender type of guy. According to MLB Pipeline, this is what they had to say about him. Stowers took off once he smoothed out his right-handed stroke and took a more direct path to the ball. He's at his best when he tries to hit line drives to all fields, and while he isn't a power hitter, he has enough pop to produce 12 to 15 home runs per year as a pro. He has an extremely patient approach and a knack for stealing bases. Scouts give Stowers solid to plus grades for his speed, yet there is mixed opinion on whether he can stick in center field at the next level. It is essential that he does so to profile as a regular, because he doesn't have the power to profile on a corner's position. Stowers' below average arm will push him to left field if he can't stay in center. So, it seems like what's going to hurt this kid in terms of early on development is his lack of arm strength and his lack of power. See, if he plays center field with his speed and defensive ability, you know, you'll take a guy who's going to hit 12 to 15, maybe even more home runs. But now say you have to move him to a corner position due to the arm strength, and then you get a little iffy because sometimes your power guys have a little more pop in their bat. So it seems like this guy is a little bit more of a development type of player for the Yankees. He was rated number 10 in the Mariners farm system according to MLB Pipeline. Currently ranks as the Yankees' number 23rd ranked prospect. And yes, this guy is only 21 years old. So, number one, the Yankees do not have to keep him on the 40-man roster right now, which they would have had to do with Shed Long, which would have caused more problems making moves and making space for him. And number two, he's a guy that they can develop through their system and see what they have. You know, he only played in 58 games in low-A ball for the Mariners. So, you know, you look at his 260 batting average, he had 20 stolen bases, a little bit of pop, he had 5 home runs. He's a guy that I think the Yankees can develop over time. And, you know, say maybe 3-4 years down the road, he could be a guy that could have an impact at the big league level. This is a risk for the Yankees, obviously, especially given that they have the competitive balance pick. But it's a move that makes a lot of sense for them. You know, if you weren't going to get big league talent for Gray, you might as well take a chance on, number one, a player that you think has a ceiling that you can develop him to be an everyday player at the big league level. And two, you bring back a competitive balance pick that hopefully brings back a solid player in return. So I like the move for the Yankees. I think that Cashman made do with what he had. A lot of interest in Gray, even though he did struggle. But Cashman was able to find the deal that best suited the Yankees. If the deal did fall out of place, I think that he had some deals lined up that he would have jumped to or altered to right away. I didn't think that Sonny Gray had a future here after Cashman's comments. And as of now, the Yankees are now moving in a different direction. It'll be interesting to see what the Yankees have in store for the rest of the offseason. You know, you look at this roster and you wonder to yourself, do you think that Brian Cashman believes that this team is ready to win and ready to win the World Series right now? Might be a couple of smaller moves on the way. We'll have to wait and see what Cashman and crew have in mind as they rev up for the 2019 season. Spring training is creeping closer, and we are getting way too excited for this. It's coming close, a couple of weeks. The Yankees will be down in Florida reporting for spring training camp. Before you know it, we'll have some spring training games, and we'll be looking forward to opening day, and we'll have a lot more discussed here on the Pinstripe Talk podcast. As we look toward the next couple of weeks, as the offseason kind of comes to a close in the next month or so, we will continue to provide you with podcast updates as everything New York Yankees occurs. Maybe we'll even do a special on when Manny Machado and Bryce Harper actually decide to sign with a team that is actually a major league team, per se. It doesn't look like either one will be a Yankee, but we'll still break down that news and how it impacts the Yankees depending on who they sign with. As always, follow us on Twitter at PinstripeTalkND, my personal account at Nick_Delahanty. Listen to us on Apple Podcasts. Rate, subscribe, review, everything you can. Leave us some feedback on the show. We appreciate all the feedback that we do get. We appreciate all our listeners on there. Also, shout out to our listeners on Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Google Play Music. You guys are great. Thank you for your continued support. We hope that you continue to listen to our podcast and hopefully join in on the conversation. As always, I'm Nick Delahanty, coming to you live from Garfield, New Jersey. This was another episode of the Pinstripe Talk podcast. Until next time, as always, let's go Yankees. And thank you all for listening to the Pinstripe Talk podcast. See you next time.